Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome to the third hour of the Political Cesspool Radio Show. I'm Bill Rowland. Here with me is Keith Alexander. We're co-hosting tonight because it takes two of us to replace one James Edwards, who is, he's off on some other adventure with his wife, and we hope he's having a good time. Just before the break, we did announce that we have two callers waiting to talk to us, Tim from Arkansas and Joe. Don't remember where he's from, but we'll find out. So, Tim, are you on the line? Hello, Tim.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, that's up to you. You've got the mic, and you called
well, listen,
in. We've been talking about
I want to congratulate you guys. Listen, I want to congratulate you guys for setting the agenda for the O'Reilly factor on Fox News. You guys are definitely doing it. Let me tell you something. I don't care what anybody says. If you listen to Bill O'Reilly, did you hear the segment that he did on the couple that was assaulted, you know, the reporters that were assaulted in Norfolk?
I've heard about it. I hadn't actually heard the segment.
Well, he did a segment, actually 2 or 3 days on it. And you know, as much as he could, he was pretty fair. The only thing is, you know, he did have a couple of people on like Tavis Smiley and you know some of that other hogwash, you know, that they put on there, you know, to prove that they're not prejudiced. But you know, the problem with that is that. That's just the tip of the iceberg. That's nothing. That kind of stuff's going on every day. And, you know, he's acting like it's an anomaly and it's a big deal. And the real news is that kind of assault and assaults like that and assaults that are much worse, albeit those old people who were in, Oklahoma that were, where a woman was raped and killed and her husband was assaulted, he finally died. You know, and things like that that are happening all the time he never really talked about. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, here's the thing, too. The I guess you may have seen on the national news the story about the highway, two people who were shot on highways in Mississippi, supposedly by someone impersonating a police officer or sheriff or highway patrolman. That turns out to not be true. Both victims were white, and the perpetrator who has been arrested and charged with these murders is black. Now, I haven't heard any talk about hate crime, you know, possibility of hate crimes charges or anything else. There were no witnesses, so that'll never come about. But what's interesting, the sidebar on this story, is that there was another black arrested and who was going to be charged, apparently be charged, or at least investigated for this crime, who was driving around on the interstate pretending to be a police officer, a highway patrolman, had blue lights on his car and a fake badge and so forth, who was from the same general area. So now he's been arrested and also being charged with, of course, not murder, but impersonating a police officer. There's two factors here in Mississippi that have to do with race and what's going on there, completely ignored by the media. And another case that had to do with a young black boy in Marshall County, Mississippi, who supposedly was almost drowned, had a cinder block or something chained to his ankle and was almost drowned and managed to escape and get away. And then when he was escaping from his drowning, he wrecked his car and ended up being injured far worse than he was in the lake where he was supposedly drowning. And the man they arrested was a white man who had been held in jail for 3 weeks. I don't know whether charges were brought against him or not, but clearly the authorities in Marshall County, Mississippi, were looking to build a case against this guy, probably hate crimes charges, make a big drama. Turns out that the person charged for attempting to kill this black kid was his own sister. So now she's been brought up on charges. And, you know, I mean, this is the ridiculous, you know, scenarios that develop around race and are completely ignored by the national media. Keith, I think you have something.
Yeah. Let me just add this. The guy that you were talking about down in Humphreys County that was impersonating an officer, The only hint of what the guy's race was in the national media was that he had a Confederate flag license plate on the front of his car. The national media was just salivating about this young black guy in Marshall County, Mississippi, hoping that they had some time to kill type white troglodyte Klansman that was responsible for trying to kill him. But when it turns out not to be, then there are no apologies, and they basically kill the story. You never hear that it gets thrown down the memory hole, as Orwell would say in 1984. What this shows is that the left is constantly trying to present or trying to find this, Alabama Ku Klux Klan lynching that never seems to happen anymore. Almost all of the crimes against black people are committed by other black people. But this doesn't fit their script. So when things go off script, suddenly this news story that was just riveting the nation all of a sudden evaporates. It's all ho-hum, I guess. And this just shows you the dishonesty of the news media, the Jewish-run news media that we have that is predictably liberal and predictably deciding what is newsworthy and what's not based on how it fits a liberal template.
Then, there's the case in Oklahoma, which also has disappeared off of radar. The kid who went around shooting up black neighborhoods. He went around shooting up black neighborhoods. He was white until they found out he was actually a member of the Cherokee tribe, and he made some pretty indifferent apology on air. They had to get that out of him to exonerating of race hate. But they haven't said anything about the white guy who was supposedly involved with him. And this story has evaporated, which means there's some element of that story that doesn't fit the script. So the play ain't going on if it doesn't fit the script. I didn't know about the Confederate flag thing, see, but that's typical. This is the problem with hate crimes. Think about it, Keith. What if you got into a road rage incident and you were the other driver was black and got out of his car with a gun? You have a gun and there's a shootout and you kill the black guy. And on the face of it, it's a road rage incident, self-defense in Tennessee, probably, if you had a carry permit, it would be. But what if you had a Confederate flag tattooed on your arm? I can guarantee you that during processing, somebody would get that information, and you would be suspect of a hate crime and somebody who was out just to kill blacks. We're getting ready to come up on a break here. Tim, any final comments real quick?
Listen, you were talking about liberals, being the first ones to get their comeuppance, when the balloon finally goes up, and I'll give you an example of that, and that's that girl.
Okay, we're coming up on a break real quick, but I hope you're right. I do hope you're right about us influencing Hannity and O'Reilly and the bunch.
No question about it.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope we're pushing the media in the right direction and that we can have some influence.
You're having some effect.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that. We'll have Joe after this break. We're going into break again. This is the Political Cesspool. Tim, thanks for your call, and we'll be hearing from Joe right around the corner.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
America has lost her way, lost her mooring, forgotten her direction, What once protected us from leftist theories and cloud-borne wish lists of egalitarian quacks and crackpots was that our principles and values were grounded on experience. What actually worked? As settlers built new political societies from scratch, from the ground up. America was based on personal responsibility, our right to manage our own affairs without the dictation of central planners or a distant bureaucracy. But we're losing that foundation. We're losing our liberty. At www.truthbasedlogic.com, we offer arguments for which the enemies of traditional America have no answers. Truthbasedlogic.com exists to help us better understand, defend, and restore the heritage we are losing.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
You have to settle for Brand X tonight. It's Keith Alexander and Bill Rowland sitting in for James Edwards tonight. We're having a lot of fun. It's had some great callers, and we're going to get back to our callers. We've been, of course, talking about the precarious situation of whites in this country with regards to the law, particularly the effect of Brown versus the Board of Education on our past, present, and future. Do we still have Joe on the line? Joe, are you there? Hello, Joe.
Yeah, calling from PA.
Calling from Pennsylvania. Okay, what's going on there?
Yes, sir. Got a quick comment about the Brown decision. It's just like another example of the judicial arm of government participating in legislation and actually creating it by precedence. And I got a comment on what you were talking about, the study. I guess it was a study. I came in kind of late with the show. Choosing the favorite color of dogs.
That was a study conducted by a black sociologist named Kenneth Clark back in the 1950s. Actually, he collaborated with his wife. And the study supposedly demonstrated that because black girls preferred white dolls over black dolls, that was an indication of a lack of self-esteem caused by racial segregation. I don't know how they made that tenuous connection, because there was no connection, but that was the study.
So it was dolls and not dogs.
Right, dolls, D-O-L-L-S, not dogs. I don't know if they'd have any preference over a black dog over a white one unless it was chasing them, but that was human being dolls, right?
Yeah, it grabbed my attention because many years ago as a child I was told this, and I don't remember this for the life of me. I don't remember it. But my mother told me, basically, when I guess I was a teenager, that she took me to the creamery where we used to pick up our milk and eggs and such. That we went in, I guess, and was my mother was conducting her business, and there was a little black boy about my age, I guess, And I just openly walked up to him and asked him why his skin was black.
And what was his answer?
Oh, like I said, I don't know. I must have been a very young boy, but my mother told me this, and you know, to my mind, it was just a correlation of the natural choosing of mates without input from the media and liberal persuasions.
Well, you know, Joe, there are studies
naturally towards our own kin.
Right. Well, there are actually recent studies, and thanks for your call, by the way, appreciate it. But there are actual studies that have been done very recently that show that innate racial consciousness begins at a very early age, as early as 6 or 9 months. I mean, that young, babies can recognize the difference in racial characteristics. For instance, you know, their parents versus some black nanny. But nevertheless, this is not something that can be legislated away or can be done away with through social engineering or through some other human effort, except through genetics. And by that, I mean the eugenics program that is now being undertaken by our government and by our society, which is to blend out the white race entirely. Well, that's not going to succeed in creating a stronger race. One of the most mixed race countries in the world, which is in fact two-thirds Semitic and one-third African, is Ethiopia and Somalia, both countries which share the distinction of having the lowest average IQ in the world and have consistently been invalids and inefficient, ineffectual governments for centuries. So, you know, if they think they're creating a better society, they're going about it the wrong way.
Let me make a couple of comments on that, if I could, Joe. There's a difference in the average or the median IQ of American blacks versus sub-Saharan blacks. Sub-Saharan blacks have an average or median IQ 50th percentile, 70. That would be considered mildly retarded in the West. American blacks have 85, 15 points higher, a full standard deviation point. The reason is, as Bill Cosby used to call it, cream in the coffee. Most blacks have about, in America, have at least 23-24% white blood or white genes in them. Unfortunately, this hasn't made them smart enough to be competent. It's made them smart enough to be dangerous. That's what has happened. And you're not going to, you can't have a society. If you have a society, let's say you have more blending, and let's say you have people with a 90 IQ, they're not going to be able to compete successfully with the Japanese or the Chinese or Europeans that have not been subject to this eugenics program that Bill is talking about. We're going to continue to lose our edge. In fact, one of the big reasons why we are seen basically throughout the world, it's acknowledged that America is a declining power economically and China is a rising power economically, is because we insist through affirmative action on putting our second and third team into the game against China and Japan and Singapore's first team with predictable results. We need to have a meritocracy, the best and brightest. And, of course, affirmative action makes sure that we don't do that. They have what they call race norming. They will, for example, pick the top 10% of the black population to go to these selective schools, and the top 10% is of the white population. But the white population is going to have a much higher IQ. In fact, one of the problems with American cities today that have black leadership has to do with the fact that there's a standard deviation point difference between the median black American IQ and the median American white IQ. American whites have an average or median IQ 50th percentile, the top of the bell curve, of 100, blacks 85. And because it's on a bell, all human intelligence is distributed on a bell curve graph, what that means is that only 16% of blacks have an IQ equal to or greater than the average white IQ, and only 16% of whites have an IQ equal to or less than the average black. When you get a black mayor, you're typically getting somebody that probably has about 103 IQ holding a job that ought to be held by somebody that has a 125 or higher IQ, and the results are predictable. That's why cities like Camden, New Jersey, Detroit, Michigan, Oakland, California, Birmingham, Alabama, East St. Louis, Illinois, Gary, Indiana, are considered pockets of the third world in America. You know, you can't have, as James says, a first world nation with a third world population. And if this eugenics program that Bill referenced is successful, we're going to be Brazil. We're going to have a third world America to look forward to. They're letting in all these third worlders from the Caribbean and from Mexico and Central America and South America as fast as they can. They're also shipping in people from Somalia, black Africans from Somalia. People from Haiti are given, you know, the red carpet treatment. They're doing everything they can to turn us into third world America. And quite frankly, as James says, I don't want to trade down. I don't want to live in a third world America. I want the first world America that the rest of the world, particularly people from the third world, find so attractive that they risk life and limb to try to get here every day of the world.
We're coming up on a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Taking more callers, 866-986-6397. This is the Political Cesspool.
Right after these messages.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
For too long now, those whose ancestors carved from a vast wilderness an awe-inspiring extension of Western civilization have been without any semblance of political representation. Abandoned by the political establishment, we now face the prospect of losing our national identity, culture, and our way of life. But there is hope. There is still time to right these wrongs. And there is a vehicle to organize our people into a force capable of reclaiming America's destiny. The American Third Position is that vehicle. It's a political party for our people, led by extraordinary patriots like Bill Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and myself, James Edwards. Our ancestors, from the gates of Vienna to the sands of Iwo Jima, sacrificed their all in order to secure Providence's most precious gift, freedom. Now it's our turn. Learn more at the American Third Position website, American3P.org. That's American, the number 3, the letter P.org. This is the American Third Position, American3P.org.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
If it's the last thing we ever do. And welcome back. The last 30 minutes of the Political Cesspool Radio Show. And I hope we haven't disappointed you tonight. Keith and I have been tap dancing as fast as we can to try to keep up with the show and to keep up with the topics, and we certainly hope you found our show entertaining and informative. We've been, of course, spent pretty much the whole show talking about the ramifications and repercussions from Brown versus the Board of Education, the landmark decision made in 1954 to desegregate the schools and thus to derail white American society, culture, and government, really. I don't know. Do we have a caller on the line? I thought I caught right at the break a caller. No caller. Okay. Well, I mistook that, I guess. I was hoping we'd have one caller for the last 30 minutes, but that's okay. We'll continue on. Keith, I think, the problem and what we're dealing with more and more with the show is that people have all the information they need to argue the case for white people in this country being, first of all, suffering from discrimination. Second, that we're being dispossessed and disowned by the country we founded, that the government is discriminating against white people on a massive scale, as is private industry and almost every other institution, colleges, schools, and so forth. And finally, that there is at least an underground or unstated eugenics program to force or coerce or to persuade whites to mix with non-whites, and that that's the ideal society when white people have been completely obliterated and have been turned into the tan everyman, as I've heard the statement made. Certainly, I'm not going to let my daughter go that way or my son. I've raised them with a strong racial consciousness and a pride in their family, a pride in their background, and they seem to have taken to that, and their friends and acquaintances think the same way. So we're not done yet.
Well, quite frankly, it's not something that just white people should be striving for. If black and brown and yellow people and red people really knew what was good for them, they would be nurturing white reproductive fecundity like a hothouse flower. They would be encouraging white people to reproduce. They'd make things as easy for us as possible. They would treat us in the same way that panda bears are treated in American zoos. You'd have people trying to encourage us to mate and have children, because white people are the harbingers of economic prosperity. Just look at a place like Memphis. Right now we're going through a transformation. The transformation has already occurred in places like Detroit, Gary, Indiana, East St. Louis, Illinois, Birmingham, Oakland, California, Camden, New Jersey. I remember when Camden, New Jersey was the first major American city to elect a black mayor. And I remember this clearly, vividly. He was on national TV and he said, "I don't know where America's going, but Camden's going to get there first." More prophetic words were never spoken. Just last year, Camden closed its last branch library. There's no public library in the city of Camden, New Jersey. There's no symphony. There's no amenities. You just have a bloated public governmental payroll where nothing is done. See, there's a parasite-host relationship here. And when white people leave a community, prosperity usually isn't very far behind. In Memphis right now, we have a black mayor and a majority black population, but the white people haven't been fleeing the city yet. You still have a significant number of whites in what is euphemistically called the Poplar Corridor, which is like an arrowhead. The further out east you get, the wider it is, and as you come into town, it gets narrower and narrower like an arrowhead. Now, because there is a Poplar Corridor and there are white areas that are stable, the city has maintained a modicum of prosperity. But now that blacks are in charge, blacks want government jobs. Why do blacks want government jobs? They want government jobs because, one, they have Cadillac health insurance. They can ravage their bodies with everything from sexually transmitted diseases to fried chicken, and everything is going to be paid for their medical treatment. Two, they get a defined benefit pension. About the only place in the whole economy where you can get it now is government employment. Everybody else gets a defined contribution pension. And every quarter, you tremble with fear as you open your statement from Merrill Lynch or whatever group is handling your 401k to find out how the Jews on Wall Street have caused half or more of your retirement to evaporate in the casino now known as Wall Street. And thirdly, and most importantly, they have civil service protection, so they can't be fired for insubordination or incompetence or lack of productivity. So consequently, in a place like Memphis, there is great pressure on black politicians to increase black governmental employment. In fact, the dirty little secret about the Memphis public school system, which is trying to take over the predominantly black, and they're trying to take over the predominantly white Shelby County system through a kind of reverse merger, that the city is surrendering its charter, and they're going to now have one big Shelby County system that includes the city of Memphis, which is over 65% of it. It's going to be like the tail wagging the dog. And the same blacks that ran the Memphis school system into the ground and made it the worst school system in the entire state of Tennessee are now going to try to take over the Shelby County system, which has consistently been one of the top five school systems in the state of Tennessee. Even though it is about 35% black, it still has white leadership and is run according to old-fashioned principles where they teach reading, writing, and arithmetic rather than the latest educational fad. Well, of course, the people that live out in the county are very upset about that, and now they're trying to get these municipalities outside of Memphis that exist in Shelby County to have their own school system. Well, things like the Memphis City school system, the dirty little secret is that they don't exist primarily for the benefit of the children, black, white, brown, or whatever, that attend that school or school system. They exist primarily for the benefit of black adults who want those good government jobs with Cadillac health insurance, defined benefit pensions, and civil service protection. That's what they want. They want those jobs. And government employment is the be-all and end-all. And, of course, Henry Loeb, who was vilified, he's one of the best Jewish guys I ever knew. He was a solid conservative and a solid citizen. I wish we could have had him loose on the entire nation, because here's a Jewish guy with an Ivy League education. He attended Brown University, who stood 6'5" and looked and sounded like John Wayne. Well, he knew that public employee unions were a bad idea. That's why he opposed the sanitation workers' strike in their attempt to be unionized, because he knew what would come of public employee unions. He said to my church, he had to quit the Jewish faith and join the Episcopal Church because he was being harangued every Sabbath by Rabbi Wax from the pulpit of Temple Israel in Memphis, telling him how he should resolve the sanitation workers' strike in favor of the strikers. As Henry Loeb told us at the adult education class at the Episcopal Church that I attended, he said, Rabbi Wax believes in the separation of church and state, just not the separation of synagogue and state. And he said that they had a long tradition of not recognizing public employee unions in Tennessee. He said he thought it was a good idea and that we ought to stay with it. He said, if I give the sanitation workers a union, how am I going to deny the policemen and the firemen their union? And then when you have a union, you will have a work stoppage eventually, and the public is just too vulnerable for work stoppages by these key, vital public employees like sanitation workers, firemen, and policemen. Furthermore, he said, it would be too easy for politicians to make deals with these new unions to give them extravagant benefits, and the politicians wouldn't be around 25 years later when the chickens came home to roost and all those pensions and other benefits started to come due. And, of course, Henry Loeb was absolutely right. He was the head of a company called Loeb's Laundry in Memphis, and he said, if I make a bad deal with my union, I'll go broke. He said, if the city of Memphis makes a bad deal with its unions, they won't go broke, but you'll be taxed into oblivion.
And there you have it. Keith Alexander going the lengths on the problems with patronage and black power. We understand have a caller on the line from Pittsburgh. We'll try to get to him right after the break. Is he still there? Oh, Frank's gone. Okay, we're coming up to the last two bits we're going to throw against the wall. This is the Political Cesspool. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable, family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Back for the final slice, the last bite of the Political Cesspool. This is Bill Rowland sitting in for James Edwards, with Keith Alexander right here on my right, and we're flying this plane, coming in for a landing shortly. We do have a caller on the line, and it is our old buddy Keith Stanton, our man in the field, who is always keeping his eyes open and ears open for a story, our best scout. What's going on, Pete?
Good evening, Bill. Good evening, Keith, and good evening, Cesspool family. Well, I'd like to talk about A Tale of Two Sheriffs from Arizona. Dickens wrote about Tale of Two Cities, but here's a tale about two sheriffs. One sheriff is known as the toughest sheriff in America and is fighting the Obama and illegal aliens. Another sheriff from Arizona likes to have sex with other men. But first I'm going to talk about Sheriff Arpaio. Sheriff Arpaio filed a correction. He conducted an investigation with his so-called cold case posse against the Obama administration. He felt that not only was Obama's birth certificate, but his selective service card were forgeries. So in, for whatever reason, Sheriff Arpaio put these people as cold case posse to investigate. So, and the outcome is that the U.S. attorney in Arizona has put lawsuits against Sheriff Arpaio for profiling people. And the people, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has been profiling is Latinos. Why? Because Governor Jan Brewer, in her good sense, signed SB 1070, which let local law enforcement do what the government refuses to do. And anyways, what the U.S. attorney failed to recognize is a case called Terry versus Ohio, where law enforcement has the ability to stop, question, and possibly frisk somebody who may be committing a crime, may be thinking of committing a crime, or has just committed a crime. But I guess the U.S. attorney in Arizona and the Attorney General Eric Holder forgot to go to constitutional law that day.
And I'm guessing that your other sheriff is the one we had on the show, Babo, who ran for Congress supposedly on a very strong anti-illegal immigrant platform, but since has dropped out of the congressional race there and is now talking about running for sheriff of Pinellas County or Pinal County. Strange word for a man like that, but
Pinal County.
Pinal County.
I wonder why he moved from the Eastern Seaboard to Pinal County, Arizona.
But, I guess name recognition.
I wasn't going to go there, Bill.
Well, I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. I'm the risk taker on the show. Well, and Babo, you know, what can we say about him is except that he, basically is really an upside down character as far as I'm concerned. You know, he's a typical confused homosexual. And unfortunately we didn't get to, do much on, homosexuals and their persuasion and their, power over Obama apparently, and their ability to, get him to jump through hoops or, hold on to their skirts or whatever. But, it's a good example of, the fact that homosexuals are very confused and unstable, and they shouldn't be in government at all, frankly, unless it's some weird borough in New York. Well, Pete, what else have you got? Anything?
Sheriff Arpaio, who's been in law enforcement for 50 years. If the Obama administration and the Attorney General's office, all they have to do is to make Sheriff Arpaio look like a fool is pull out the original documents and say, here's the birth certificate, here's the Selective Service Registration. As you can see, it's no longer a forgery. But if you go on YouTube, and there's a whole bunch of clips about the possible forgery of Obama's birth certificate. Now, I know almost nothing about documents, forgery, things like that, but if you look at the form itself, it just looks does not look right. I mean, it looks like they took a part of a book and copied on a piece of green paper, but it doesn't look like a whole page. But if somebody knows something about forgeries and documents, and especially using Adobe Outlook, then give the cesspool a holler.
Well, I can tell you for sure that we had a guest on this show who gave national coverage because he came out and flatly said there was no birth certificate. That was Tim Adams back a couple of years ago when we were at the National Council of Conservative Citizens meeting conference, and he came flat out and said there was no birth certificate, and he was he was an election official in Hawaii. So certainly we now know perfectly well that Obama's a forgery himself, and a bad one at that, one forged by Bill Ayers and his leftist cohorts. Keith, some final words. We just got a couple of minutes, but it's over to you.
Okay. First of all, need to realize Bill is also, besides his association with the political cesspool, very involved with the Council of Conservative Citizens, former editor-in-chief of their newspaper, The Citizen Informer. And if you look at their website, there is a book written in 1991 by Obama, and on the flyleaf of it, it says he was born in Kenya. Now, how this would be ignored by any objective journalist is beyond me. It shows that we don't have an objective news media. We have a news media that's in the tank for the left. This man obviously should never have been allowed to run for president based on the qualifications for president that are set by the U.S. Constitution from day one and have never been changed. But, of course, we ignore that now because the liberals are in love with globalism, and the idea that somebody has to be born in America in order to be the president of the United States, how cruel and how intolerant and non-diverse is that? Now, let's get back to the homosexual issue, okay? We're talking about why the homosexual, why Obama came out for homosexual. I can spare, it's a five-letter word, M-O-N-E-Y. Like Jews, homosexuals tend to be wealthier than the average bear. In fact, a lot of them have very lucrative careers, and unlike the rest of us, they're not troubled with the cost of private school for their children because they typically don't have children. And as a result of that, they have a lot of disposable income, and they tend to get involved in liberal causes and politics, just like Jews, okay? So he wants to attract that money. You know, he's not really interested in capturing any white votes. David Axelrod has already come out and said they have no strategy for outreach to the white community whatsoever. It's all minorities and special interest liberal groups like homosexuals. And they say money is the mother's milk of politics. That's why he's going after them. He thinks if he can get enough money and if they can get enough electoral fraud in urban areas like Philadelphia, where we had that new Black Panthers debacle in the last presidential election, where we found that certain voting machines in certain precincts had already been preloaded with tons of votes for Obama before the polls even opened. That type of stuff is what they're planning on. Fortunately, our founding fathers foresaw this type of problem, and they gave us election by the Electoral College. So rural red state America still gets its say, and that's the whole key. Now, if they have a larger popular vote for Obama than for his opponent, which looks like it's going to be that great Massachusetts conservative, that's an oxymoron, by the way, named Mitt Romney, that there's probably going to be rioting in the streets, and there'll be all sorts of movements afoot for one man, one vote in federal elections, doing away with the Electoral College. Don't fall for it, folks. The Electoral College is one of the great safeguards that our founding fathers, in their wisdom, put into the Constitution, and we certainly need it in times like this. You know where your state's going to go. It doesn't matter how many people vote for Obama versus vote for his opponent in the Republican Party. What matters is what states go red and what states go blue. And if enough states go red with enough electoral votes, then Obama will be out. Now, again, you have to worry about this redistricting. We're being challenged under the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to have voter IDs, which are obviously non-racial on their face. They just want everybody to show a photo ID in order to be able to vote, to cut down on the rampant electoral fraud that happens in black precincts. Here you go.
Well, it's been quite a show, as always informative, from Keith Alexander. And, you know, in the last seconds here, I'd just like to thank the callers for calling in and all the people who participated in the show. I just realized that we might have had a chat room tonight, but we didn't have a computer access. The computer here in the studio is not working. So I apologize to everybody if you were expecting a chat room tonight. We simply didn't have access to it. But tune in next week. It could be that we'll have a huge chat room and lots of people talking about the political cesspool. In the meantime, I'm Bill Rowland here with Keith Alexander. We've been your hosts tonight. Next week, James Edwards will be back. And the one and only, the incomparable James Edwards. For everybody else, happy landings.
joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.